Welcome everybody to the Blue Skies Dronecast bonus episode, all about the newly announced DJI Ronin 4D. So just Adam and myself in the virtual studio today, but we're going to be talking about, yeah, like we've just mentioned, the Ronin 4D, and I think Adam is very excited about this. We were watching the live stream, not together, but, you know, talking as we were both watching it separately, and yeah, pretty incredible stuff, I think, and hopefully you'll all appreciate this bonus episode. We're going to quickly chat through it, and it'll be outside of the normal Wednesday release date, purely because there'll be a week basically without the episode being launched. So we're going to launch it as soon as we can, and we're going to basically just talk about this new product. So yeah, Adam, thoughts? What do you think? Pretty interesting, isn't it?
You know what? I think I'm absolutely mind blown by this. There's a few things which I think are potentially missing from a drone point of view, or lack of kind of potential compatibility. We'll get onto that later. But I'm absolutely astonished that they've managed to create something, I would say, quite incredible, and there's nothing else on the market like it.
Yeah, I was going to say, this really doesn't exist, does it? There's lots of different elements that do exist, but nothing that is like the one-stop shop, I suppose. And I think that's why I like it, because the film industry is very much kind of, I wouldn't say old-fashioned necessarily, but they're set in their ways, aren't they, with certain things, and it always is the same. Nothing really changes. Whereas I think this suddenly has molded together two, three, maybe four bits of equipment into something pretty manageable, really, hasn't it?
That's it. I mean, for those that sort of don't know what we're talking about with this DJI Ronin, is they have effectively merged together a camera system, a gimbal system, an autofocus system, and a wireless transmission system all into one modular package, as it were. And you know, from a traditional, I put in quotations, filmmaking point of view, usually all these are bought separately. You know, you buy the camera from, I don't know, Sony or Red or a Canon camera, and then you'll buy the gimbal from, I don't know, you could buy a Ronin gimbal from DJI or a Freefly Mavi. And then again, you've got the wireless transmissions. You might get a Teradek or something like that. You know, there's all these kind of things you have to consider and bolt together. Well, actually, DJI have just gone, here's everything in one package.
yeah, which is, again, means hopefully it should be more reliable, because there's nothing worse trying to get loads of different systems to try and talk together. They do normally work, but I've been sort of, you know, on sets before where, you know, the Teradek suddenly doesn't work for some reason, or it's not getting the camera feed in, or the gimbal isn't talking to, you know, the gimbal operator's, you know, control or joystick and stuff like that. So it kind of eliminates, hopefully, the sort of the unpredictability of everything, and the sort of the crossing of fingers when you put everything together, really. So I guess there's four major bits that we can focus on, and the website that we're basically looking through as well mirrors that too. So I guess the first thing to talk about would be the cinematic imaging, wouldn't it, I suppose, really? So we're talking, relatively big numbers, aren't we, Adam? 6K and 8K, apparently, isn't it?
Yeah, so they've released two versions. There's a 6K model and an 8K model, and to be honest, not too much of a price difference between the two, I would say. I think how they've kind of priced it is, I think they want people to go to the 8K model because it's, we'll come on to pricing shortly, but there's not a huge step up between the two models. Both shooting up to ProRes RAW. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. You know, it does 422 HQ, ProRes RAW. Absolutely incredible. Some of the tech that they managed to pack into these, what I would call a relatively small package, 35mm sensor as well. So, you know, there's full frame sensors in what is essentially a relatively small package. You know, not a small DSLR, but something you could just hold.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of get a sense of what the size of this will be, but just looking on the website, it's the, obviously they've called it the Zenmuse X9, which obviously follows along from sort of the X5 cameras, etc. And I imagine it's going to be something similar, maybe a little bit larger than the actual X5 camera, I imagine. And it looks very similar to that, doesn't it, as well? And what made me very interested is when you look at it attached to the next part of the system, it looks like an Inspire 2 quick release that it uses, or something similar to that. And I don't know, I want to bet that the next Inspire or something similar will be attaching that camera or something similar, because then you can whip it off this, put it on your drone, and you can fly it, which would be amazing. So that's my prediction. What do you think, Adam? Do you reckon that might be the case?
Yeah, they're definitely going for this modular design. And I think it is, you'll be able to take your Zenbuse X9 off your Ronin 4 and whack it onto your Inspire 3 if that's what you want to do. And the video transmission system that they've come out and released again, I think that's probably, again, something that they'll just kind of bolt onto their next level of pro drones here. I don't think we're not talking about Mavic 3s here, which I think hopefully should be coming out in a couple of weeks. We're talking the next iteration of the Inspire.
Yeah, which is really exciting, because the Inspire 2's quite old now, isn't it, realistically? Even though it still is incredible, it's pretty old, and it needs to be replaced with, I imagine, something similar to this. And that's what you want. You want the same camera on the ground as in the air, don't you, to make everything nice and simple. So I think that's probably the way they'll go, but we'll see. Time will tell, I suppose. It then bolts onto, or clips onto, I should say, the Steadicam type of thing, really. So I guess traditionally, if people haven't heard of sort of this Steadicam idea, it was basically one person's job, wasn't it? They had this great big almost exoskeleton on. I remember a chap I used to work with, it was a great big exoskeleton with this thing that you had to hold, and it was a huge great thing, but it was very good. You could see him running and walking, and the camera would just be absolutely dead still. And this is kind of mimicking that, isn't it, in a interesting way, but in a much smaller way, Adam, as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you'll see actually a lot of Steadicams. If you, I don't do football, but if you do watch football, if you look at some of the guys on the ground where they're running alongside the pitch, those guys are Steadicam operators. And they are bulky. I remember being at university and wearing, having to train to wear one of these, and I'm not built for it. I'm a very, very slim guy. I don't have the build for it. These guys are hench, but athletically hench. They're incredible. It's very hard to balance as well, whereas this just looks I could be completely wrong, I haven't held one yet, but it looks like it's almost just like, pop it on and it just balances it for you. I have seen from looking at sort of the extra products that there's a counterweight for if you're putting different lenses on, and we'll come on to its sort of lens compatibility shortly. But if you've got a heavy lens on the end, you can buy a counterbalance for it. Cool. But I think if you're using the proprietary DJI lens, I'm guessing you could just pop it on and the system will just go, it's balanced.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. Yeah, and that's kind of where the name comes from, isn't it? The three axis is basically the gimbal. The fourth axis is the Z axis, which is the one that is quite impressive, and it'll smooth out all the bumps that you might get if you're running or you're walking or you're skateboarding or anything like that. So it is quite an overlooked kind of axis to dampen, but a very important one, I think, especially when you're really running around and doing a lot of animated shots, I suppose, really. So that's really cool to see that,
especially
happening.
If you're going up upstairs, going upstairs, you've always that kind of if you're watching this on the YouTube version of the podcast, you'll see me kind of going, but you go up like this, you will see a bounce in the image, unless it gets smoothed out in post-production, but this eliminates it completely. It just keeps it buttery smooth, as if it is literally gliding. The image is literally gliding. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's very true. Next thing then we move on to is the focusing side of things too, I suppose, really. And again, obviously, normally you either have autofocus, which I imagine isn't overly good. Manual focusing is obviously the best way to do it. And again, that's someone else's job, isn't it? The focus puller, that's literally their job, is to pull focus depending on what the camera's looking at. And this is using LiDAR now, I think, a little bit like the I want to say the iPhone, but I don't know if any other phones do it at the moment. I don't think they do, but potentially iPhone.
Not any mainstream ones. I think the Samsung ones aren't using it.
No, so they're using some of that technology, which is basically autofocus, but much better, I think, Adam. Do you know much more about that side of things? Or
I mean, I'm not big on sort of the technology behind the LiDAR focus, but I think it's not relying on light. So I think obviously if you're in the low light conditions, it's not looking for those kind of individual RGB pixels. So using the light, using LiDAR, it can have millions and, well, I don't know if it's millions or thousands, it could be millions of focus points. And I think using its AI technology, it'll be able to pick out the person and provide depth. And I think that's the key thing, actually, is it can work out depth between, yeah, you know, a person and in its background. And that's they're using this... It's quite clever, actually, what they've got. They've got this a manual focus, an autofocus, and like a it's literally a hybrid, which is a, I think they've called it a manual autofocus.
Yeah, that's where, right, yeah.
Again, I'm going to have to re-watch the videos. We've literally only just watched the launch event, and it looks as though it's like you can manually focus on the fly. You still have some control, but using that AI technology, it's able to know that, you know, there's a person there, and it's like, well, yeah, follow that person. No, I want to switch to that now. Yeah. And perhaps you press on the screen, I'm guessing, and it'll shift the focus organically to the next object.
That's right.
You tell it, rather than the computer saying, oh, someone else is on the screen, I'll go to that. You tell it to focus on that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I think it's all to do with the, I think they use dot projection, don't they? They project all these dots over everything, and the dots that then bounce back, it knows that they should be a certain distance apart. And obviously, if you're further away, then the distance could be different. And so that's how I think it works out, the depth there. And also, I think with the manual autofocus, I think it kind of gives you a visual representation of kind of what it thinks the focus should be and maybe what the focus is. And you can kind of tap between one or the other. I think that's what it was getting at. Like you mentioned, I've only seen the video once, but from what I could see, you could kind of tap where you wanted the focus to be as opposed to twisting a lens or something instead. So again, hopefully more intuitive and much more simple to use as well, which is another cool thing. And if that wasn't enough, we've then got the fourth main subject that they talk about, and that's the wireless transmission. So I imagine it's going to be utilising their Lightbridge. They won't call it that probably, but I bet it'll be something similar to Lightbridge, and that is very good. And like we mentioned before, there are HD systems out there, but again, this is all kind of linked in with DJI, and we've mentioned the TerraDeck, haven't we, Adam, before, and that used to be good, even though sometimes it didn't really give you much range. You know, it was sometimes, you know, hundreds of meters as opposed to what it was supposed to do, whereas Lightbridge, I don't think I've ever seen Lightbridge run out of distance. I think it's always very good, isn't it? So have you had much experience with the TerraDeck side of things, Adam, and other stuff?
Not an incredible amount, but I mean, again, from what I've sort of looked at this, I mean, it can transmit 1080 60 frames per second wirelessly, and you're just like, what? That's, you know, traditionally you'd have either, you know, a very crap image being transmitted wirelessly, or you'd have to run, you know, your cables, HDMI cables at the back of the camera, or SDI cables at the back into your monitor. And this, I've got for those that are on YouTube, you'll be able to see we've pulled it up on the screen, which is the wireless transmitter.
Yeah.
And somebody holding it on the screen. I mean, the idea is that actually you could have the director or the DOP literally holding this and, you know, changing the focus wirelessly without being anywhere near the camera operator, or, you know, changing the white balance or changing the exposure whilst the camera operator just cracks on with getting the shot. So it just looks insane.
Yeah, it's difficult to kind of explain, isn't it? Because this has never really been something that could happen before, and now it can happen, and we're like, oh, this is confusing now. It doesn't make sense. But
it reminds me a bit of the obviously we had the Movi controller and things like that. Yeah. So obviously that was designed to work with the Movi, but never had a built-in screen with it.
No.
So you couldn't control all the different settings. And obviously this goes above and beyond controlling the gimbal. It controls the camera and the camera settings, and I would assume the gimbal settings as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so they're sort of the four big points, I think, that are the most important to talk about. And obviously there's other features too. And again, Adam, what do you think sort of is the next thing that kind of stands out sort of for you, do you think, as a system?
So I'm just having a quick... I'm just pulling up just for the guys on screen. I don't think I can show it properly on the YouTube version, but if you go on the website, you can see this integrated design. I think that is that for me is the biggest thing, that you can literally take off something and replace it, you know. So I suppose if, heaven forbid, something got damaged or something, you wanted to change something out, you can just do it. You don't have to buy a whole new system, which again is very unique for a camera. You know, I suppose Red have kind of done that themselves. You know, you buy a box and you bolt on other things, but this just looks very sleek. And the fact that it's all built in with that gimbal.
Yeah, the camera's super tiny, isn't it, really? They've kind of replaced the... rather than having a great big camera that's being stabilised, they're just stabilising the sensor and lens, aren't they, essentially? Which, again, is always good because it takes less power and it's much smaller and stuff like that too, I think, which is good. They've obviously got built-in ND filters, I think, as well, which is nice. So you can flip between, is it 9, I think, or so? I think there's quite a few.
I can't remember exactly. We'll perhaps come through it on the website, but I know it goes all the way up to ND512, which is mental. I mean, if people know the FS7, the Sony FS7, for example, it's used quite a lot in the sort of, I'd say, low budget commercial spaces. Goes up to ND128, built-in ND. So you're like, wow, you can actually shoot in very bright conditions with this camera, and you don't have to invest in ND filters. You know, you don't have
more
to
screw.
Yeah, you don't have to screw on an ND filter on the end. It's all built in.
Yeah. Yeah, and talking of sort of screwing things on, there's the different types of lenses as well, which are obviously DJI ones out of the box, I suppose, but it takes a lot of different other types of lenses, isn't it, to add them. I'm not too hot on the lens side of things, but I can see a picture of lots of lenses on the screen, so that must be a good thing.
But I'm just getting to it now on the website.
Yeah, it's a
just
tricky website to scroll nice and quickly, isn't it?
That's it. If you're on the YouTube version, you'll see me kind of scrolling through. Currently on screen, you've got sort of the module, the TB50 battery actually on the back. That's an interesting one. They've gone for the TB50s. You know, I thought they'd be retiring them now.
From the Inspire 2, isn't it, that one? Yeah.
So if you've got, so that's an interesting, I'm wondering whether, you know, is the Inspire 3 going to have TB50s? Are you going to have to replace all those batteries
It is interesting because it is a 6-cell battery. I wouldn't have thought they'd go any higher in voltage than that, but again, I could be wrong. So, you know, maybe that battery is good enough too, obviously, on the Inspire 2. Maybe that's enough power for the next alliteration, or maybe it'll take 4 batteries, Adam. Never know.
So I'm just on the website. I'm still on the website bit here, so you can see on the screen here that it does, like I said earlier, it does Apple ProRes RAW 422 HQ, H.264 for those that want to shoot H.264, so you don't have to shoot ProRes RAW, which will absolutely mince through data storage.
Yeah, I heard that.
So it does up to 8K, 75 frames a second, or 4K, 120 frames per second. That's quite normal for a lot of cameras these days to do 120 frames a second at 4K, but 8K at 75 frames a second, you're going to need some processing power to do that, which actually I suppose is quite interesting. With obviously Apple have just released the new MacBook Pros with the new M1 Pro and Pro Max. I can't remember which.
Yeah, that's right.
Which are designed to handle ProRes. So it's like, oh, I wonder if this is a coincidence. They've almost been released,
literally
a day apart.
I think, because watching the announcement trailer or the keynote was so Apple, it was unbelievable. So there must be some sort of overlap somewhere along the line. And yeah, they were talking about those Macs, again, were super impressive as well. You know, being able to edit, was it, I'm probably going to get this wrong, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but it was like 4 streams of 8K footage or something mental.
Something crazy.
So there you go. You've got your new gimbal system and camera and your new computer sorted.
So next thing I've just got up here, full frame sensor. So you know, it's the same. Was it similar sensor size? I can't remember if the X7 is super 35mm sensor.
Oh yeah, I'm getting mixed up now. Oh yeah, because there's a 7, isn't there? I was talking about the 5 before.
The X5 is micro full thirds. I think the X7 is super 35mm, or it could be full frame. Regardless, it's full frame sensor on these X9 ones. So so it's an incredible sensor size. So yeah, pro level sensors going on here. Just scroll a bit down. I think we get down to. Well, actually, we've got dynamic range, 14 stops of dynamic range. So all the way through, this is properly pro level stuff that they've knocked out. Yeah, there we go. Built-in 9 stop ND filters. So it's cool. 9.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it is brilliant to be, I should say really the best thing to be doing is looking at the website, because there's so much. I'm just looking at a little demo here of the Z-axis being switched on and off, and you can see how when it's off, the runner and the little fence line bobbles about, whereas when it's on, it's, yeah, you think it was just a sliding camera. So there's so much to look at on the website. It's hard to put it into words, I think, isn't it, sometimes?
It was a bit crazy because I was trying to do a bit of a live tweet on the UAV Hub Twitter feed. And they were just, I mean, this thing with Apple are quite, you know, do it at a very slow pace, you know, enough time for you to type out on Twitter about what to be released. These were just knocking, you know, these features out. I was like, I can't type fast enough. What is happening? There was just so much being thrown at me.
Just have to tweet the live stream instead. Just like, watch this. This is a lot of information here.
So much.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? Yeah, there's so many little demos of all the little bits we've talked about here with the autofocus and the sort of the LiDAR explanation, and also the auto manual focus kind of, again, all clips from the announcement keynote, I think, really. So it is a good place to be having a look, I think, isn't it? Yeah.
Just reached the bit about the DL lenses, which is the DJI's proprietary lenses. So as standard, you can mount the same lenses. Actually, it looks like it's the same lenses that are that will work with the X7. I can't confirm that, but it looks like it. So they've put that it supports 3 compact full frame prime lenses, which I'm fairly certain are the 3 ones from the X7.
They could be. Yeah.
And then they have said that they more DJI lenses will be available in the future. So interesting that DJI are really going for it on the lens front now rather than relying on third party.
Yeah, well, again, it makes sense, doesn't it? Why not have everything in one box, I suppose, really? Yeah, for sure, yeah.
And then the next bit where, if you're on YouTube, you've probably just seen the animation flash up about interchangeable mounts. So this is, for me, probably one of the most exciting things that I didn't think they would do, because we've just talked about the proprietary lenses for DJI. You know, they are renowned for doing proprietary things. You know, you must buy DJI. Actually, they've gone, and I think it's a testament that they understand the filmmaking industry, that they've gone, well, we've got our lenses, but if you prefer to use your own lenses, we'll support them. So they, you can interchange the mount, so you can put Leica M lenses, ultra wide, f/0.5 large aperture, electronic zoom, macro, anamorphic lenses. So you can whack these on the front of this gimbal, get this $6,000 gimbal, and you've got everything. You know, you get it, it's actually mad that probably one of the lenses that you can mount on the front of it will cost you more than the setup.
Yeah, I believe that as well. Yeah, and people are very particular, or directors are very particular about lenses, aren't they? So I think that would be a reason to not use this if it didn't accept those lenses, but obviously it can do. So that's, another huge benefit, isn't it? I think they're trying to remove barriers for trying to get people out of the standard systems that they use just to try it. And I reckon when they try it, they'll probably be like, wow, actually, yeah, this is a lot more impressive. A little bit like the interviews they did at the end of the keynote they did today. They was talking to a lot of directors and DOPs, weren't they, which was interesting. So what else do you like, Adam?
So next up, we've got this wireless control. So again, the idea is that everything can be controlled wirelessly from these from the wireless controllers. So the autofocus, obviously you can either leave the autofocus to the camera operator or to the system or to a third person if you want to leave it to an autofocus puller. They still have that option to do so, you know, and they've got this wireless lens control built in. Again, you don't need to buy a third party wireless control system. It's all comes with the package.
Yeah, it almost looks like a game controller. I'm just looking at it now with the screen in the middle and your two hands on the controls. It's it's an all-in-one type of system, isn't it, really, I think? And you can almost just, either just let the camera sit somewhere or attach it to something and you've got full control, I suppose, like you would have if you were holding it, which, again, is cool. I think they were talking about the fact that it's remote start-stop as well. You know, some cameras still have to be, you know, hit the record button, and then you've got to go back and start your filming. So just remote record is revolutionary, yeah. It appears as well. So yeah.
Yeah, it's not relying on the camera operator. You can have your, I suppose it's a weird one, because I suppose you'll have your gimbal operator, and you could have your camera operator, your DOP separately, and controlling all the focus and controlling the all the ISO, the white balance, the exposure settings. That could all be controlled cable free.
Yeah, and I think that's the confusing thing with this. It's like we're talking as if, you know, it's still, there are certain people's roles that are always there, aren't they? The focus puller, the director, the DOP, all of these people like have their specific jobs. And now this camera's come along, it's almost like it can almost be done by one person, maybe two. And that's confusing, because then you think, well, is that going to take people's jobs or is it not? And I shouldn't think it would. They'll just have to learn to, you know, use the camera in a different way, I suppose, really. But it's just weird talking about this system without those different people doing their specific jobs, I suppose, isn't it? It's funny.
Yeah, I think for bigger productions, there's always going to be an individual person having an individual person's job. You know, there'll always be a focus puller. There'll always be the camera operator, the gimbal operator, you know, one and the two, the DOP. But I think this system frees up the creativity, and I think that's the thing, it's freeing up creativity for independent filmmakers, for, you know, small crews, student films. You know, I can see, you know, in the next 12 months these being snapped up by universities, because universities you know, generally do buy lots of equipment each year. They'll always invest in new filming equipment, and it's usually they'll have to buy gimbals, they'll have to buy cameras. Well, actually, for six grand potentially, they only have to buy one setup, and it's like, well, there you go, one person can go out and shoot all this, do those dolly shots, do those tracking shots with no extra gear. It's just one package, go out and shoot. You're not limited by equipment anymore or personnel.
Yeah, that's another benefit, isn't it, I think, as well. Yeah, I think that's it. It's probably aimed at that sector, isn't it, I think, as well. Yeah, definitely.
I've just pulled up. I don't know if you can see this on your screen, because this DJI page is... If you could stretch it out on a piece of paper, it feels like miles long. So I'm just on the four-axis stabilization. It's the... what they've packed into it to give it that four-axis stabilization. So they've got, I'm just going to list them here. So they've got forward visual sensors, TOF sensors, downward visual sensors, an IMU, a barometer. So so if you're coming from, obviously, from that, you know, the drone or point of view, you know, straight away you go, oh, there's an IMU. Oh, there's a barometer. This is equipment that you'll find in drones. And they've gone, well, it works for drone technology. Let's pack it into this gimbal technology to give it that fourth axis stabilization.
Yeah. It seems like the only thing it's missing is some propellers. Really, doesn't it? It's almost a drone.
That's it.
You know, all of those sensors are super useful to position a drone, so why not position a gimbal with it? You would, wouldn't you?
Well, I suppose, you know, if the person is the drone at the end of it, they're the ones holding the camera and the gimbal. So, you know, why not? Why not have it if the system needs to know where it is in that 3D space to make sure that it can compute it and make sure it's all stabilized? So I just thought it was interesting. With you saying, you know, the only thing that's lacking is a drone. obviously, we haven't touched on that yet. As far as we could see from the promotional images, it doesn't seem like it's been built to go on a drone, but it looks like it might be to a degree.
I would say the X9 looks like it could be. The rest of it is probably quite heavy, isn't it? I would say you probably could, if you found yourself a big enough drone, I'm sure you could do anything you wanted to. But I think the idea would be to leave all the bulkier stuff on the ground and put the X9 on this drone that doesn't exist yet, I suppose. But yeah, it could be wrong. Maybe they'll put it under the Matrice 600. I don't know. It seems that's quite an old aircraft now. So whether that has the capability, I don't know. It's all speculation, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I did see. It's not on this webpage, but if you can watch the full sort of hour long promo of it. They did say that it can be mounted on things like on jibs and dollies. So
that's right.
It looks like they've got some kind of universal mount to allow it to do that. And actually, I would say, well, if it could be mounted on a jib, it could probably be mounted on a drone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's if you wanted to quickly do it, you know, before DJI work out, or not work out how to do it, but release the way to do it, then yeah, that's exactly probably, yeah, exactly what you could do, isn't it, with a super heavy lift aircraft. But yeah, there's just so much to look at here, isn't it? Just sort of mindlessly scrolling through these strange interactive videos.
I think in terms of the website, I think I've sort of reached the sort of the end of Moto. I've just reached the point of the LiDAR focusing system. We covered most of that off at the beginning. But actually, you can see on screen here the LiDAR waveform, so you can see the dots of it picking up what's going on for those that are watching on YouTube. Again, if you're listening to this, I really do recommend go onto the DJI website and just have a scroll through. You could spend about an hour just watching the videos and watching the animations. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah. What we haven't spoken about is, I guess, the storage options as well. So there's different storage options, aren't there? And there's also output for sound as well. So there's lots of different jacks and XLR ports, which is great too. So, you know, you can really connect in microphones up as well.
I was very surprised at that, actually. I was surprised that didn't forget, but, you know, it's almost, they almost can be forgotten about. You know, we're all focusing on the camera system and, you know, the gimbal system, and, you know, actually, you know, we still generally need to capture sound.
Normally.
So it's good, actually, that they've put in those, you know, useful ports, HDMI port, SDI ports, XLR ports. They've got all of those essential ports on the, it's weird because I want to say on the camera, but it's on the gimbal.
The body, isn't it? I suppose I'd call that the camera body, and the lens mount can be moved around. Weirdly.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. I'm just on the playback, so you can see on screen here there's the video for the mirror control and independent recording and playback on that system that they can hold. So you can see that, you know, you can have the director seeing absolutely everything
and controlling everything as well, I guess, too.
That's how I've just reached on the on the screen all of the storage options. So we've got the proprietary SSDs, so it looks very similar to the Inspire 2 SSDs, but it is different. So I would say if you have an Inspire 2 setup, it looks like you are gonna have to fork out again for new storage options.
And they are DJI's changed, doesn't it, now for hard drives, for, you know, since the Inspire 2 came out, I imagine, quite radically. So that would make sense.
Absolutely. I forgot it. So we just got it's got a built-in CF Express Type B slot, along with a USB 3.1 Type C expansion port for recording directly onto an external media disc. So actually, they have left it open that you can use other systems using USB C. So USB 3.1 Type C. It's always a mouthful. But if you want to shoot ProRes. And I think it might be ProRes RAW. I could be wrong. You might be able to do. It might be all of them. You do need the DJI Pro SSD 1 terabyte, which slots straight in. But I think it's got a little expansion port. I think it has an expansion port you put on, and then you put this Pro SSD into that.
I see. And that'll probably give you 2 minutes worth of filming.
That's it. No. Shooting at ProRes. ProRes RAW, probably about 5 minutes.
Yeah, maybe a bit more. It's amazing how much data it uses, isn't it, actually, by the sounds of things. I don't know, I haven't tried it myself, but no, I think it's a huge amount. There we go. And obviously we've talked about the batteries as well, the TB50, so that's interesting as well. They're obviously going to carry on using those, I should imagine.
Yeah, I've just spotted that it offers up to 2.5 hours of shooting time and can be fully charged in 1.5 hours. So, you know, a couple of those batteries, you know, pack of those batteries, you could be shooting all day long, especially if you've got them always on a rotation.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah, and they keep themselves warm as well, which is, you know, again, unheard of, I would say, in standard camera or gimbal batteries, really. You know, you would be using, I'm going to forget the name now. They're something Lock, aren't they? What are they called?
V-Lock,
you
know, yeah, V-Lock. V-Lock,
that's right, yeah. And they're just batteries, so they could get cold and obviously be next to useless potentially. So the fact that these heat themselves is a bonus in cold conditions, isn't it, too? So.
Yeah, I don't know if some people coming from a professional point of view would like the fact that it doesn't. Well, I mean, I'm not 100% sure yet. It might support V-Lock potentially, but it looks like it's designed to go with the TB50s. So whether people will like that, because obviously if you're coming from a professional, you might have a full pack of V-Lock batteries that you'd rather use. But you know what? If you're gonna be forking out this money for this, just go all in. Just get your TB50s and have done.
Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it? You know, again, I'd say the V-Lock batteries, you know, again, I'm probably talking out of turn because I don't know too much about them, but again, you know, they're a tried and tested system, but so are other batteries, I imagine, too. You know, you've just got to make sure your kit can use them, I suppose. Yeah.
So just moving on, so we've talked about the main body ports here. There's the 3.5mm stereo jack, microphone jacks, HDMI Type 8 output, and that supports 1080 60 frames out. You've got the power input port. So if there is a power input port that supports 12 volts to 30 volt power input, that likely does support a V-Lock. Depends on the mount on the back of the gimbal to support the V-Lock.
Where you put it and stuff, yeah.
Mm.
I see.
So it's got that.
Oh, okay.
Timecode port, SDI port, and two XLR ports with phantom power. So
cool as interesting. Well. Oh, nice. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, the sound recorder still be happy with that, won't he?
That's it.
Or they.
And then, and then just finally, this remote monitor, the back of that, we've just got it up on screen here. This is being wirelessly transmitted from the body to your handheld station. And yeah, you've got a 35mm stereo jack on the back of that, a micro SD card to record the video feed. So good if you're after potentially proxy files, or you just want to have a quick look, you know, rather than dumping terabytes of footage, you can be like, you know, just shove that on the computer. Let's have a quick look at this on a bigger screen. Type-C ports, power input ports. So again, you can power this remote monitor from probably a V-Lock again. HDMI out, so you could take it from this wireless transmitter to an even bigger monitor. So if you've got those big, you know, big on-set monitors, you could take the feed from your little wireless screen to that straight away, and an SDI port as well. So they've just honestly thought of everything.
Yeah, I think they have. Yeah, it seems a very, very well thought out system, and hard pushed to think of much or anything really that they've missed out or forgotten potentially, really. So I guess we can just finish off with final thoughts then, Adam. Really, any final thoughts? You're the video man, really, aren't you? So what do you think then, sort of as a conclusion?
Well, just the one thing I know I've kind of dropped it in a couple of times is the price. So there's two models.
Yeah.
The base model, which shoots up to 6K, is $599. And the next model up is just shy of $10,000 or just over $10,000.
Yeah, I think it was.
I won't know where that looking, but let's just stick with the base model at $6,000. It shoots up to 6K. I'm like, you know what? That is fantastic to have a gimbal, a camera that'll do up to 6K. It'll shoot 4K, 120 frames a second. This wireless transmission, you'd be hard pressed to find that anywhere else if you bought all these things separately.
Yeah,
I do really think it's going to be a game changer for the filmmaking industry. Perhaps not a game changer for high end, where they're using Reds and Arri Alexas, because you know that's what they're shooting on. But for TV and for low budgets especially, I think it's actually going to revolutionise people being creative and not being limited to technology.
Yeah, Yeah, that's it. It looks like, you know, switch it on, press record, and off you go, which is great, isn't it? I think from that point of view, yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, I think it's yeah, an interesting concept, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of what people do with it, I think, in the future. Once I don't know when it's actually released, but it's obviously you're able to buy it now, but I don't know when deliveries are. Does it mention that, or
it doesn't mention at the moment? You can reserve now, and you put your email in, you can be okay. On the waiting list for it, but they haven't said when. Exactly, it's going to be out. I would say generally not too long, I would have thought. I don't imagine there's going to be. Well, I'd say that. I don't think it's going to be as much high demand for the likes of a Mavic 3, for example. But actually, there are thousands of filmmakers out there from all walks of life, you know, from your students through to your professionals, that probably will go, that's what I want. I'll snap that up. But yeah, whether it's a brand new A cam or as a B cam for their current setup.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had $6,000 personally, I'd be like, sign me up. If I had the $10,000, I'd be like, I'll definitely go for the next model up. But you know what? If I've only got $6,000, it's amazing. It's incredible.
It's still good, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah, no, yeah, really interesting. So, brilliant. I think that wraps up this bonus episode. So, thanks very much, Adam. Thank you for having a chat with me about it. And yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you all, or speaking to you all again, I should say, at the normal time. Wednesday's episodes are still coming out as normal as well. So this is, like I said, a bonus episode. So yeah, anything to finish off with, Adam?
Just a couple of things. There's another two scheduled live events, I believe.
Oh, that's right.
Two weeks apart. So I think there's one next Wednesday and the one the week after. We don't 100% know what they are. We think the next one's going to be possibly the next Action Cam, we think. I don't know if we're generally going to be covering that one. I don't know if it's that exciting for our audience. But if the one after, so in November, is going to be the Mavic 3, we'll obviously be covering that as best we can. You know, we will do a bonus special one and talk all about that. And I know that Matthew is desperate to talk on that one.
Yeah, he can do that one on his own, can't he?
That's it. We'll just leave Matthew with a camera rolling.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, so that's what we think. Whether that'll happen or not, we'll see, I suppose. But yeah, a couple of episodes or a couple of release videos to look forward to, I suppose, really. So with that, thanks very much for listening, everyone. And yeah, like I said, we'll see you back very soon. Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye.